Before we start, it is important to say that the opinions expressed in the Shudder Sports podcast are individual and not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening. And as always, whether you agree or disagree, we invite you to join the discussion on Instagram at Shudder Sports Media or Twitter at Shudder Sports M.
Welcome to the Shudder Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Eli, and today I'm joined by a group of people who all had a role in making the coverage of the U Sports tournament as great as it was. So why don't we go around the table and everyone say your name and what job you were working during the tournament.
My name is Dylan Baker. I was the color commentator for all 8 U Cup games on Radio-Canada on the French feed, and I also hosted the U Sports Awards breakfast on the Wednesday.
My name is Eric McDougall. I had a couple of roles. I was a audio mixer for 2 games. I was a ISO producer for a game, and I was a CG operator for another game. So I was spread out like a butter on toast.
And my name is Katie. I was the in-game one of the many in-game photographers for U Sports and TMU Bold throughout the whole tournament.
I'm Eli, the host, and I had a mishmash of things. I was more so on the behind the scenes of the tournament, so I was setting up that awards brunch that Dylan and Katie were both working at. I handed out awards there. Just a few minor and major tasks. I had to hand out VIP passes and things like that. So just a mishmash of things for myself.
From the little leagues
to the pros,
this is your weekly sports show.
Welcome to the Shudder Sports Podcast.
Take a seat at the table as we discuss.
On today's episode, we'll be recapping the U Sports Men's Hockey National Championship. Here's how today's episode will work. We'll go around the table and break down each round of the tournament and give our thoughts on the history made this year. Let's start with a recap of the quarterfinal matchups. This round started with Brock facing off against UNB, TMU against Calgary, McGill versus UBC, and UQTR against Moncton. Let's start with you, Dylan, as somebody who had a very good look into each of the games.
Yeah, it was a really exciting quarterfinal round. We actually had a running joke with the production crew that the afternoon game, which was the one that Curtis Coleman and Matthew Smith both worked for each of the quarterfinals, was not good, and that's just because of them. And then the night game that Damian and Griffin were working was going to be the good one, because the afternoon games were not particularly great. UNB versus Brock was one-sided. It was only 2-0 through 2 periods for the Reds, but they were dominating play. And then the next day, UQTR Moncton was not a particularly close game either. But those evening games, the Calgary versus TMU was fantastic, really close game. And McGill versus UBC as well came right down to the third period. So a couple of good games, a couple not so good games in the quarterfinals of the U Cup.
Yeah, the McGill game is interesting too, because that's an upset. Like, everyone's expecting UBC to win that, and it was a really close game, and McGill played really well. That was actually the only game that I was just watching, and it was really fun to just take that one in.
I think it was all the live band.
Yeah. For sure.
I think the band had everything to do with it.
But McGill's not your average 6 seed, right? Like, they were right near the top of the OUA standings during the regular season.
They
got that
6
seed because, yeah, they were ahead of UQTR. They got that 6 seed because they faltered in the OUA playoffs. But they're a very solid team.
Yeah, I think they were actually, in my opinion, better than UBC on all fronts, offense, defense, goaltending. They were just so much more dominant in everything. It was a close game, obviously, but they were just, like, looked better. They looked like they were, like, had more chemistry, and they, like, kind of came out like a video game. Like, everything was going how it was planned to be.
Yeah, and Dylan, you have a little insight. It shouldn't have been that close of a game. There was actually a goal that wasn't counted.
But yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm allowed to dive super deep into the details, but essentially what happened was there was a play where the McGill Redbirds took a shot that looked like it went in at first, and McGill was adamant the puck crossed the goal line. But it was called no goal, and the officials did not see it go in on the replay. And so that could have been a pretty controversial moment if McGill lost that game. But luckily for the Redbirds, they were able to hold on, and that goal didn't end up mattering because they won the game anyway. But yes, it could have been a little more separated than what it was.
Just quickly going over the first matchup of Brock and UNB, wasn't particularly close. UNB dominated the whole time, but I think it's important to mention why Brock stayed in that game so long and what benefits it brought to their goalie, Connor Unger. Katie, if you'd like to talk about that a bit.
It was not a close game when you look at ice time. Just looked like it was straight, tilted vertically. Like, the puck was always in Brock's end. But their goalie, Connor Unger, rookie of the year for all of U Sports, had a great game, as he often does, and it benefited him. He ended up with a contract with the Oilers AHL team after that. And so, he has a bright future ahead of him. I think he's a good goaltender.
Yeah, he played amazing. In the beginning, he didn't look too great. Like the first period, he got lit up a little bit. But after that, he really dialed in and he made some crazy saves.
Two goals lit up.
I mean, yeah, it was two goals in the first period and you're not getting any goals. That's a light up in my books in the first period. Like,
yeah. Okay, when
the puck's 6-0. In your end the entire time, I think only letting two goals is kind of miraculous. Brock didn't get a shot on goal until I think the last minutes of the first.
Yeah. They were really
so when the puck's staying in your end with all the blocks and everything going on, it's very impressive in my mind that only two goals were let in that entire time.
For sure was. I think the final shots were like 45-14, I think was the exact number.
Brock definitely only had 14.
On the scoreboard, I think it said 45-14. I don't know if they changed that after the fact online, but just a super one-sided game. And I mentioned on the broadcast, I said if there's any team that could upset UNB here, it's Brock and Connor Unger, because he could steal a game for the Badgers, and that turned out to not be true, because the hydraulic press that is the UNB Reds was able to just pound the Badgers and pound everybody they faced over the weekend.
They're just a unit. Like, they act like a robot together.
But it also just feels like good vibes surrounding that team. We had both everybody here, or three of us here, saw a speech from their coach when he won Coach of the Year. I believe you had a conversation with him. I had just handed him an award and he was super kind. He seems to run a tight ship, but at the same time, friendly ship. They seem to have a lot of fun. We saw them in their pregame in the second round, and they just looked like they were enjoying themselves while also keeping their heads in the game and had their eye on the prize.
Katie.
They're a disciplined team on and off the ice. Like, the day of the final, they were there before I got there to work the bronze medal game. Like, they were apparently had been at the rink since 8 a.m., and they did not play until 5 p.m., which is actually just crazy.
Yeah.
And also, just that final stat, it was 44 shots and 41 saves, one of those empty net goals. So, yeah.
Yeah. Just to add on to UNB and their coach, Gardner McDougall, he was a super nice guy, gave me a couple of shout-outs, during the awards breakfast, one during his post-game interview the next day, which was cool. But Gardner McDougall, fun story about him that I don't know how many people know. The St. John Sea Dogs in 2022, before the Memorial Cup, fired their coach after the playoffs and brought in Gardner McDougall to coach only the Memorial Cup tournament, and they won the Memorial Cup. Yeah. Gardner McDougall is the most successful coach in U Sports men's hockey history, and you know what? He runs such a good program. I had the chance to watch UNB practice on the Friday, their off day, and that practice was so well run. It was so regimented, and everybody was executing everything perfectly, but you could still hear laughing and having a good time. McDougall was skating around smiling. So
it was actually crazy. I worked their practice on the Wednesday, the day of the awards breakfast, and it's just like everyone knew exactly what drill was coming up, exactly where they were going. He said like one word and they just were in the drill.
It's a crazy program.
Do we just want to talk about the TMU Calgary game real quick? That overtime winner, it was just a tight game all around. Kai Edmund stole that game for TMU for sure, and Carson Gallagher sealed the deal with that OT winner.
Gallagher, shout out to Carson Gallagher, a guy who was not guaranteed a spot on this team this year. Like, he was a guy who really had to fight for every second of ice time that he got. Underrated skill. Carson Gallagher,
especially
scored
in the playoffs.
Yeah, scored a beauty in the Queen's Cup final, and then of course scores the overtime winner. Just an impressive performance this year, and TMU head coach Johnny Duco was able to rely on him down the stretch.
Yeah, both those teams are definitely like pretty balanced. Calgary had like size advantage. I think their average height of their team is like 6'2" or something
or even crazy.
They're big boys. But this is definitely a battle of goaltenders. Like, Carl Tedichuk for Calgary had 46 saves.
Yep,
he was amazing. It could have gone either way. It went double overtime. That just means like literally any shot, it was just like coming down to what happens. I think TMU hit a couple posts during the game. Calgary hit like a lot of close chances. It was definitely a matchup that was my favorite in the entire game. I worked it. I was there. I was like kind of mad low-key that I was like, oh, double overtime, but I wasn't mad because
it was
such
like
a good game to watch.
O'clock. Yeah. I was like, I'm ready to go to bed.
Hour-long train ride home for me was unpleasant, let me tell you. I was on the second last GO train out of Union Station that night, but man, what a fun game.
You made it.
I did.
Moving on to the second round, semifinals saw TMU against UNB in a bit of a bloodbath and McGill against UQTR in an OUA East rematch. Let's throw it over to you, Dylan.
Yeah, the semifinals were interesting because, like you mentioned, the bloodbath game between UNB and TMU was not a particularly good one. UNB showed why they were undefeated this season and how they were able to have so much success. But again, that night game between UQTR and McGill was fantastic. I mean, so much back and forth action. I've never seen this happen twice in a game where one team will score and then within 20 seconds, because I think the first goal, the first response goal was scored 17 seconds after the other team's marker, and the next one was scored like 8 seconds after the other team scored. They were able to respond so quickly. First, it was UQTR going down the ice scoring. McGill answered back in a hurry, and then McGill scored the go-ahead goal after they were down 3-1 to make it 4-3, and then UQTR tied it up within 8 seconds or something crazy like that. What a game between the two Quebec universities in this tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what they always say, you're most vulnerable right after you get a goal. So, and a lot of it, to mention, first period, a lot of power play goals, a lot of shorthanded goals going both ways. Yeah, it was a great game, great rematch. That series that they had in the OUA East Finals were really close as well. Although there were two shutouts in that OUA series for UQTR, and that just shows Alexis Gravel really carried that team then, and he did this tournament as well.
Alexis Gravel, former draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks. He was a very talented goaltender in junior, went to Blackhawks training camp a couple of seasons, now dominating for UQTR.
Just a quick question for you, Dylan. Up to that point, you were covering every single French broadcast, and obviously McGill, UQTR, both Quebec schools, so predominantly French. Would you say that was the biggest game of your career up to that point, broadcasting-wise?
Maybe. There's a real possibility that it was. I mean, I don't know. We didn't get any viewership numbers on that game. Moncton UQTR was also a big one because Moncton is a fully French university, so I'm sure there were lots of people tuning in for that game. But yeah, it was a big game. It was two Quebec universities. I know it was well viewed on the English side because those games were on YouTube. The French side was only on the Radio-Canada website, so we didn't get any viewership numbers, but I would say that's probably, if not the biggest, certainly top three biggest games I've ever covered.
UNB UQTR would have been up there too, though, like the finals.
Yeah,
because UNB is French as well.
Yeah. No, lots of big games that were a blast to be part of the coverage for.
For sure.
And you, Eric, another question is, you would have been in the control room for both, for every single round, I think you were back there. Did you notice like a level of stress get progressively higher and higher as the games became more and more important?
I found it actually the opposite. I found it, the first game was the most stressful because with a bold live game, the team, you don't have to worry about commercial breaks. You don't have to worry about making sure there's like, you don't have to worry about a French broadcast and an English broadcast. You don't have to worry about like half the stuff we worried about. So like, the first game was like super stressful. You had to make sure all your marks hit because audio had to track everything. Graphics had to make sure things were live, updated both French and English. By the last game, we kind of got into this routine where like everything was like, you knew what's coming next, you know what's all flowing, and it was almost like a well-oiled machine. It was like UNB was in our control room running the broadcast. Like, it was just that perfect. There was definitely stress coming into the final, like, wow, this is like the national broadcast, like this is for all of Canada, like the top cheese. But
yeah,
definitely I think the opposite when it came to actually producing and doing the actual job of the control room.
Just want to say, by the finals, and I'm sure you think this is the case too, Eric, everybody in that control room and everybody that was working on air could have recited the rundown from memory. Like, it was the same thing every show, and I think that helped everybody get comfortable quickly. But at first it was a huge adjustment.
Yeah, I remember like the one of the audios, the second clip you play like this intro, and then you play like the second like French intro, and the audio jump between those two was insane.
Yeah.
And it was all in part of one clip, so like if you didn't mix the audio down, it's like your earbuds, they start to bleed because of how loud it was.
And then we'll cover the TMU-UNB game quickly, but I don't think there's much to talk about.
Yeah.
From a fan perspective in that game, it was just hard to be there. We had more UNB fans in the building than TMU easily. They all traveled with the team.
Shout out to the traveling clan for UNB.
For sure.
That was impressive.
I mean, if you go to a tournament knowing you're going to win, you're going to bring in a pretty
also,
big crowd.
No, but they were also all super kind people.
Oh, yeah, they were great.
Like, we had UNB.
That's the New Brunswick way.
And they were all just super kind, lovely people, and we ended up chit-chatting with them as TMU got blown out 7-0.
But no, Kai Edmonds had a great game that game. He had a good game. It could have been much worse if it wasn't Kai. Like, think if you had any other goalie in net, could have been a worse game. He had some great saves, especially early in the first. TMU came out, I had hope.
Yeah.
Like, they came out so strong, so fast. They got the first shot of the game off, which hadn't happened in the tournament against UNB, and I don't think did again after. Really, it looked promising, and then it just kind of went downhill.
Yeah, no, TMU, they came out with some momentum. They're like, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and then all of a sudden, they didn't do it, and they really didn't do it. Like, UNB took full control of that game after the first 5 or so minutes, and you could just see, when UNB scored their first goal, TMU got a little more dejected. But by the time that second was scored, they're like, okay, we're done. We're not coming back in this game. And it kind of just snowballed from there.
And that's goes back to the discipline for UNB. Like, they just know what they're running, and they keep doing it and keep doing it. And TMU emulated that in the first, like, 5 minutes. But as soon as it went the other way, that's where the discipline and endurance kind of, you can see why UNB is so good.
I was sitting right where the TMU comes out, and like obviously you can see them get progressively more defeated and sadder in their like eyes and just their body language as that first period went on. And they come off the ice. Everybody thinks that TMU is just going to feel as if this game is over. And they surprisingly came back on the ice for the second period, and they looked like they still had it in them. And then by the end of that second is when like true defeat had hit them, and they knew.
Statistically, they actually played better.
Yeah, in the second and third. They got more and more shots as UNB started trying less and less.
But another...
I was going to say, UNB started to pass the puck quite a bit.
They implemented the three-pass rule.
But you can also tell by TMU, they had 7 infraction and 14 penalty minutes.
Yeah, that does
on the game, which is just it just shows how like pissed off they were getting at just like the game.
Sure. Also, like
Kai Edmonds tripping the people in front of the
game. That was hilarious. Pulling out your stick and just that was really funny to watch. The other thing about that game is I found TMU, like despite all these penalty minutes, weren't being physical at the right times. Nope. They were being physical out of anger. And when there were moments where, like, Hyman specifically should have laid on a massive hit, he, like, just lightly bumped into somebody.
He was playing hurt. Hyman,
was he?
He was dealing with something. That's why he didn't play in the Queen's Cup against UQTR. He was playing with
something. He took Bowie's spot in this. Like, his Bowie was out with a broken knuckle.
Yeah.
And so Hyman came in for...
I don't know what was hurting Hyman, but he was cleared enough to play in the U Cup. But you could tell...
It was hard to
watch. Like, in the quarterfinal against Calgary, I was talking to a few people that were covering the game. I was talking to Griffin Butler and David Brosseau, my play-by-play guy. And we were saying, like... Every time that Hyman would call for a pass, he'd wind up for the one-timer, and then he'd hesitate and catch it with his skate because he couldn't get that shot off. Like, there was something up with him. But I agree with you that a lot of those penalties, a lot of that physicality was born out of frustration.
Yeah.
You often hear talk about a good penalty versus a bad penalty.
And TMU's not an overly physical team. Like, they have Zach Roberts and Elijah Roberts, really, are the two front men.
Jackson Doherty, too.
But the two Roberts, they're not... big men, really.
Yeah.
And they're like, if they're leading your physicality, it's not going to...
Both scrappy guys, like, scared of getting hurt. They're fun to watch.
I think the only big takeaway for TMU is that they can kill penalties. They had took 7 penalties that game and let 1 goal in, so they can kill penalties.
It's UNB, too.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have just
kept
4 guys on the ice during
that
game against UNB.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, let's get to the medal day. TMU and McGill had a familiar matchup in the bronze medal game, and UQTR challenged UNB, hoping to score the first goal against the Reds all tournament. Let's throw it over to you, Katie, to talk a bit about that.
Yeah, we'll start with the bronze medal game. TMU and McGill were, as you said, very familiar with each other. Our homecoming game at TMU was against McGill, beat them. I forget the matchups, but I believe TMU beat them more times than McGill.
January 13th, I want to say, McGill was at TMU. McGill was leading 2-1 after 2 periods. TMU came back, won that game 5-2. That was the only time they faced off in the regular season.
Yeah, because the homecoming game was not regular season, but it was a 2-game series, and I think we took them both. And so that would make it 3 times beating them, and they lost the one that really mattered.
I think they were so dejected from that UNB game.
It happens.
The energy throughout the whole building during that game was just awful. It was the day after.
It was an
11
a.m. game.
11 a.m.
day
after
St. Patrick's.
Yeah.
Not a lot of energy in the building. One important thing to note, Elijah Roberts in what was likely his last game playing in fairly high-level competitive hockey. He has a daughter now. He's probably going to move on, start a family. TMU was his last competitive hockey run. He played in the O. Got the first goal of the game 2 minutes in. What a good moment for him to just have a goal in his last game. And it was a good moment for TMU. Again, thought there was some hope. You know, they started off strong again, but just couldn't finish.
And Brandon Frattaroli decided to ruin that good moment,
scoring
2 goals. And he's not the player. He's not that guy for McGill. He actually had 3 shots the entire national tournament.
Well,
two of them were big ones.
It's funny you mentioned that, Eric, because he was fantastic in the regular season for them. He was their points leader, if I'm not mistaken, during the regular season. Didn't lead them in goals. That, I believe, belonged to Eric Uba. But for McGill, it was Frattaroli who paced them in points. And David Brosseau and I were talking on the broadcast of that game and said, he's been kind of invisible in this tournament. We'll see if he has an impact. And then sure enough, he scores a couple of great goals on a couple of great passes from Scott Walford. The first one, a rebound where Frattaroli was able to put it home. And then the go-ahead goal, the second goal that Frattaroli scored was just a fantastic pass from the left circle by Walford. Walford, a former draft choice of the Montreal Canadiens, he was able to find a seam and execute a great pass to Frattaroli, who made a nice move on Kai Edmonds. And like we've talked about, like the energy was not there in the building, like you said, Eli, but it, particularly for TMU, there was just, it didn't seem like anybody really came to play with everything they had that day, with the exception of probably some of the graduating guys like an Elijah Roberts that we've talked about.
Yeah. And again, McGill had their band. The energy was really on their side.
Let's talk about the final game of the tournament, which was UQTR versus UNB. UQTR obviously hoping for the upset here. How did things play out, Dylan?
The way you'd expect them to. I mean, I thought UQTR might put up a bit more of a challenge, but UNB is just such a well-oiled machine. And we've talked about the fact that UNB did not allow a goal all tournament. Credit to Samuel Richard, the goalie.
Yeah,
he was fantastic.
He saw like a ton of shots, but
in
the
that
ones
UQTR
he did,
game,
yeah,
he
that
was
one, it was close. Yeah,
yeah, he had his fair share of tests against TMU and against Brock, but in that UQTR game in the final, he had to make some big saves, and he was clutch. And he actually ended the season on a streak of 200 plus minutes without allowing a goal, because in the playoffs he also had not allowed a goal for a certain stretch.
Yep.
UNB ended the year where they hadn't allowed a goal in even more time. Like, just crazy stats coming out of the UNB run, and just incredible stuff that all culminates in a big shutout gold medal victory.
And even that goes back, the goalie statement, to the practice. They had this drill where they had to like dump it in, whatever, and then you have to go until you score. And I didn't realize they were going until they score, until they finally scored like 10 minutes later and all celebrated they were finally done the drill. I was like, that's what we were waiting for? I thought it was timed. But no, this guy just didn't let a goal in for like 10 minutes straight on his own teams. And UNB, they all have insane shots too. And the fact that he like didn't even let them score is crazy.
His regular save percentage over the season, I heard, was like 95 or something.
It was something crazy like that. I think both goalies had a goals against under 2 and a save percentage over like 925-ish. And he actually won the MVP of the U Cup last year as a first-year goalie, which is like unheard of. And their backup, Griffin Outhouse, he was terrific during the regular season too. They split the games all the way up until the U Cup, where Richard got every game. During the regular season, I think Richard had 16 games and Outhouse had 14. And then in the playoffs, they rotated every game because they just felt that confident in the goaltending tandem they had. Outhouse was a talented fourth year, Richard just in his second season, but you could have put either one of those guys and you could have been confident in victory.
Championship game. They didn't see that many shots in each period. I think that they didn't break a single digit. Like, UQTR didn't break single digits in shots. So that just shows, like, even the UNB's goalie, like Richard, was not seeing shots the whole game. So, I mean, he wasn't even ready for most of the game. Like, he wasn't warm. He just had to make those big saves whenever there was chances, because UQTR had those chances. There was definitely a lot of close calls where they could have put the puck behind the net, but Richard just had to be there. He just was there, and you couldn't move him.
Yeah. Again, talking about the consistency of UNB, they had exactly 11 shots in each period.
Wow.
Thank you for joining us on the Shutter Sports Podcast. Be sure to follow and subscribe wherever you find your podcast, and don't be shy to join the discussion on any platform at Shutter Sports Media. Until next time, I'm Eli, joined by
Dylan Baker,
Eric McDougal,
and Katie LeBoudelaire.
And this has been the Shutter Sports Podcast.
Shout out Julian in the back.
My last little bit.
I cut it, I think, every time.
I do a little clap, and then I go, shout out to the producer, Julian Rhodes.